this sober mind, intoxicated tongue, with that smooth talk, hot like the sun. Hitting the interviews, yeah, we doing a thing, cause I guess keep it lit straight on the scene. Whether it's stories, hobbies, or just the job in life, best believe we spark it off and do it right. So stay tuned, cause we about to take flight, take it a new height, yeah, this that podcast, where we having a blast and getting it done, cause you are now in the mix.
Welcome to the Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue podcast, or SMIT for short, a podcast where Ricardo interviews people from all walks of life, diverse people with different careers and different hobbies, all with fascinating stories to share. You can find all of our episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts, or go to smitpodcast.com to find our most recent episodes. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at SMIT Podcast. And now, please welcome your host, Ricardo.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining me today. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, I thank you so much. On this episode, I am going to be reacting to a video. Actually, it's going to be two videos about a mobster, ex-mobster or mafia guy, who is going to kind of talk about a little bit about the movie Goodfellas. Now, his name is Michael Frances. I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. But, he has a lot of experience with the, he was in the mafia for a long time. Got locked up and did a lot of time. His dad was actually a mafia guy too, so his dad was locked up for a long time as well. So he has a lot of experience when it comes to that. He has his own channel, actually, his own YouTube channel. I mean, I know there's a lot of mafia guys that that have their channels now. Some that are based on, I don't know myself, but some of them, I guess, are not quite famous. I guess this guy was pretty famous. He was actually in the movie. Or he was actually mentioned in the movie, if I'm not mistaken. But his name is Michael Frances. Now, he has his own channel. If you want to go check him out, he has really interesting stuff. But I'm just going to be reacting to his take on the movie Goodfellas. I know I watched a little bit of it, but not very much, because I kind of want to react to this one. Now, typically on this podcast, I do a lot of interviews with different people, but I think I decided to change a little bit. I'm still gonna be doing the interviews, but once in a while I'm gonna be doing these reaction videos. Now, I did hear from some feedback from some family members that it was kind of boring. So hey, if it's not your thing, it's not your thing. I'm not gonna be hating. But I think it's kind of interesting and it's kind of fun, and I'm just sitting back and relaxing, and I'm drinking some cold beverages. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into this video.
And you had Nicky Eyes.
What's up, guy?
And Mikey Francesi.
Yeah, I want to see him.
Now, hopefully the sound is not too not too loud, because I think last time when I did the reaction, the sound was a little bit too loud. But yeah. Well, we'll keep working on it. This is his interview, his introduction. Michael Frances.
Everybody, welcome to another sit down with Michael Frances. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope you had a great weekend. And it's Mob Movie Monday.
There you go. It's Mob Movie Mondays. So he does have a lot of, based on his thing, he has a lot of, he reviews a few of the movies. He has The Godfather. I don't want to do The Godfather because I never watched The Godfather. So I don't think it would make a good reaction, I guess. So yeah.
So, I always told you that the three most accurate films as far as capturing the essence of the mob life, the street life, was Goodfellas, which we're going to review today, Donnie Brasco, and the original Gotti movie, the HBO Gotti movie with Armand Desante. We spoke about that already. I know a lot of people agreed with me. So they you know, really capture the essence of the street life, the mob life as I knew it. Not necessarily factually accurate in everything that the movie portrayed, but a good depiction of the life in general. So let's talk about Goodfellas. I've been asked about that so many times. Let me get...
If you haven't watched Goodfellas, it is probably one of the best movies out there. I mean, one of the best mobster movies. I mean, they're all very similar. But I think this, the Goodfellas, I think it has a... I don't know. Maybe it's because it's the first one. Well, I want to say the first one that I watched, but it's definitely one of the best ones that I've seen. And I said most of them are very similar because I think they use the same characters. So, like, you know, Robert De Niro, obviously he's an Irishman now. The Irishman. And some other movies. And they might be overplayed, but I think it's you know. Anyways, let's get into it. Let's keep going, I should say.
One thing straightened out right away. This is Henry Hill's portrayal of that life. It's his story. You know, it comes from the book The Wise Guy, written by Nicholas Pileggi, and it's Henry's revelation of what happened during that time. And for the most part, I think, you know, Henry did a fairly accurate job.
Now, Henry Hill, he's a main character. He's the one that, you know, like he's like Michael's saying, he's the... I guess it's based on his interpretation of his life and all. But not Henry Hill himself, but whoever the dude who plays Henry Hill, I mean, does a really good job. You know, from it just makes, he's a very, he makes it look really real.
He did say pretty accurately what was going on during his life at that time. But let me get a couple of things straight. Number one, Henry never looked so good, and I don't mean to be demeaning to Henry at all, but he never looked so good as he did in that movie. Henry was not the figure that was portrayed by Ray Liotta in a big way. What I mean by that, Henry was kind of an unfortunate soul for most of the time that I knew him, most of the time that he was on the street. He had an alcohol problem. He certainly had a drug problem.
Well, I think for a while, I think part of the movie, actually, it's not he's not portrayed as a very good looking guy. I mean, I guess you could, but I think there's a big part of the movie where he is on drugs. He's doing a lot of coke. I think it's towards like probably the end, probably. So I guess it's not not a good view of it of him. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
A little bit later on, maybe he had it longer than later on. I don't know. But I can tell you a couple of things. Henry never walked through the kitchen of the Copacabana without somebody that was with him, like Paulie Vario, if Paulie ever really hung with him, or some of the other guys. You know, just you got to understand that, and I'm not trying to put Henry down. I'm just trying to tell you the truth. And he wasn't that close to Paulie Vario. You know, in the movie, it was depicted that he was with him, that he knew him, that, you know, Paulie treated him like a son. I don't believe that to be true. I knew those guys. I knew that crew fairly well. He was very close to Jimmy Burke, and he was part of Jimmy Burke's crew. He did know Tommy DeSimone, obviously. But again, this is Henry's version of the story. So always remember, you know, that everything, there are going to be inconsistencies.
Well, that's Henry's version based through the producers or executive producers or the writers. I don't know whoever does that. So it's maybe Henry kind of, so maybe Henry's story was very was not as exciting as some of these writers made it out to be. So maybe he's not the one that even hyped it up. It was probably just the producers or writers or whatever you want to call them. So it's not all Henry's fault, Mr. Michael.
He's in it, and of course, you know, the producers, the director, they take dramatic liberty whenever they make a film. Has to be. They only got an hour and a half to do it. So let me go through a couple of things. First off, you know, the scene where they're around the bar and they're mentioning names and they look at somebody and they're going, there is Mikey Franchisi. You got to understand, my wife up to that point, she didn't get into all of this stuff. She didn't read my book. She didn't really know what was going on in that regard. She didn't want to know. And as the movie proceeds a little bit, she looks at me and says, is this really what your life was all about? Because remember, California girl, didn't know anything about the mob.
That's kind of funny that he's mentioning that he was mentioned in the movie, because I don't, I know this movie fairly well, and I guess I don't know the names, but that name doesn't really stick out at me, to be honest. So I don't know how or where he did say where it was at, but I can't remember exactly. Excuse me, I can't remember the exact scene, but it doesn't resonate with me.
Our only connection to the mob was me. So she says, is this really what your life was all about? And I said, come on, honey, it's a movie. Watch the movie. It's Hollywood. They make things up, right? No sooner than I say that, than this scene in the bar comes out. And there's Mikey Franchisi. And I look at her. I says, come on, honey, let's go. I was surprised. I didn't know why they mentioned my name. I wasn't part of that crew. Yes, I knew them, but whole different crew. Those are the Lucchesis. I'm a Colombo guy. And I tell my wife, that wasn't me. It was probably somebody else, even though I don't know anybody, you know, with the...
So what he mentioned, based on what I know, is that the Lucchesis and the McKaysees, whatever you want to call them, those were the just the families, I guess, the mob families. I guess there was five of them, New York. I'm not too sure, but that's all I know.
The name Michael Franchisi, that was part of that life. My dad's brother, Mikey Franchisi, his older brother, was not involved in the mob. He's the only other Mike Franchisi that I know. So anyway, she goes home and she Googles me, and sure enough, okay, Goodfellas, Michael Franchisi, there I am in a mugshot, and it shows that the guy Bono, whatever his name is, Mickey Bono, I think, he portrayed me. I asked Henry later on, why did you throw that? And I asked Nick Pileggi too, because I knew him. I said, why'd you throw me in the film? He said, oh, Michael, you had name value. Henry knew you. Jimmy Burke knew you. So we put your name in there. And I had visited, you know, the suite, which was Henry's club in on Queens Boulevard at that time. I also was at Jimmy Burke's place. I think it was called Robert's Lounge, something like that. So that's why I was in the film. But yes, it was me. So that's number one. A few more things with Henry. Again, he wasn't the same guy that was portrayed in that film. It was unfortunate because I think deep inside, Henry wasn't a bad guy. He really wasn't. I had opportunity to speak to him way, way later on after he had gotten out of the witness protection program. He was in California trying to straighten out his life. I told you a couple of stories about him. I'm not going to be redundant and get in again. But, you know, just unfortunate. But listen, it was a great movie. So that was his version of it, his version of it. Another thing you may not know, the movie My Blue Heaven was written by Nick Pileggi's wife, Nora Ephron. That was also based loosely on Henry Hill's story. So great movie if you haven't seen it. Steve Martin was great. It was just
So I guess Henry Hill was a lot bigger. Or I wonder why he's or he was portraying so many movies. I guess I don't know. Maybe he was. I don't know. In the movie, he doesn't seem to be this. As far as the actual hierarchy, he wasn't very big. As you know, he was. Kind of weird.
Wonderful film, a comedy, but you got to watch it. It's about a guy in the witness protection program that was once in the life, the whole thing. You'll enjoy it. So, you know, that's that with Henry. Obviously, I can get into a lot more with him, but you know my relationship with him. You know about Henry, so let's move on. Let's go to Paulie Vario. I can tell you this. Paulie was not the same guy in his personality and his character that was portrayed in the film Goodfellas. In Goodfellas, he was kind of a godfather type guy. He, you know, was like a father to Henry Hill. He wasn't that way in real life. He was a pretty rough kind of guy. He had a rough reputation. He was a capo in the Lucchesi family. And I knew Paulie. He had a piece of a couple of nightclubs out in Long Island, one being a club called 231, the other one Channel 80, one of my favorite places, a place I used to go to all the time. It was on the water. They had an upstairs like balcony in there, and I'm telling you, two, three nights a week, I was there with, you know, 30, 40, 50 of my crew up there, and we used to have a blast. So, and I knew Paulie. I met him once or twice in that place. He always was in and out of trouble, had a lot of stuff going on. He did get hurt by Henry Hill. Henry did testify against him.
Well, I think he testified against a lot of people. So, yeah. I guess maybe that's what made him, is making him, or maybe that's what made him famous, or, you know, more famous. I'm sure he's not the only one that testified against their people, but maybe he just testified a little bit more.
Once, because Paulie did Henry a favor and got him a no-show job so he can get out on parole in one of his prison stints. And Henry testified to that fact, and you're not allowed to do that. So Paulie, I think he got 4 or 5 years as a result of that. And then he testified against him again, I think with the Lufthansa case or some other thing that was going on. So Paulie did get hurt by Henry Hill. I can tell you this, that Paulie did put a contract on Henry Hill's life. And that's one of the reasons why Henry flipped. I know that Jimmy Burke was also pretty upset with him. I will tell you this again. Paulie was against drugs for his crew, didn't want it. He said it brought too much heat. It gave guys too much time. He didn't like the fact that Henry was involved with drugs, and that was one of the reasons why the hit was put out on him. There was a story that Jimmy Burke was profiting.
Now, Jimmy Burke, I think he's the one that's played by Robert De Niro, if I'm not mistaken.
With Henry Hill, off of the drug business. I don't know that to be a fact. I knew Jimmy. I didn't know him to be involved with drugs. Jimmy was more of a, you know, he had a crew and they did a lot of robberies and he had money out on the street. I know that for a fact. I didn't know him to be involved in drugs. And when I did speak to him one time, he had denied it. So, and I didn't ask him that. He just said, you know, Henry is involved with drugs. It's something we don't do. So he kind of disassociated himself with that. I did tell you a story about Henry when I went into Lewisburg Penitentiary and how he helped me out by giving supplies. He was upstairs, I was downstairs, I was in transit during that time, and he took care of me while I was in Lewisburg Penitentiary. So, good guy. I like Jimmy a lot. He can never be made because of the fact he wasn't Italian, but he was a stand-up guy, and he was known to be that way. So, let's move on to Tommy DeSimone. I get asked about him all the time. You know, people, I got to tell you this.
He was Tommy DeSimone. He was definitely a character, man. He made the movie. Henry was the star, but, you know, Joe Pesci or whatever his name is, or Tommy DeSimone, he made the movie. At least in my opinion.
Tommy had a rough reputation. He was, to me, he was crazy. Okay, so allegedly killed a lot of guys. I believe a lot of that to be true. A lot of stories that I heard. Again, I met Tommy, I think 2 or 3 times with Henry, and once at Jimmy Burke's place, the Robert Lounge, I think it was again. I wasn't particularly fond of him. You know, he wasn't one of the guys that I would hang out with. He was a pretty violent guy, but guys like that don't last in this life. You need to understand that. You know, are you afraid of a guy like that? Well, he's a loose cannon. You don't know what he's going to do. So, yeah, you're on your guard with somebody like that because you don't know. Well, what happened with him? That scene where Henry and Jimmy and Tommy killed Bats, that's true. It didn't quite happen that way. I think there was more to it. Yes, Bats did insult Tommy DeSimone. I know that for a fact. I heard about that afterwards. But I think there was more to it. I think Jimmy had some involvement with Bats. He maybe have picked up some of his Shylock customers on the street. When Bats came home, he wanted those.
That's kind of crazy to think about. So in the movie, they made this scene where, you know, the one he's talking about. If I'm not mistaken, he killed him over the fact that he was kind of making fun of him or making fun of Tommy, how he used to be a shoe shiner. If I'm not mistaken, and that was kind of like the that was like the joke or the biggest reason that, you know, they killed him was because he was he kept making fun of him, and, you know, so it's crazy to think that there's a lot more behind the real story. I mean, it's not crazy, but it's a little weird. I wish they probably would have. If you kind of think about it with Goodfellas, if there is so much more to this to the movie, like this one in particular, this scene in particular, they could probably do like some spinoffs to Goodfellas, like, I don't know, Goodfellas 1.2 or something. You know what I mean? Like, not 2, but
things back, and I think Jimmy might have had a problem with that. That's what I heard. And he wasn't killed on the spot after he insulted DeSimone. That was planned. It happened later, and I know it happened at one of their bars. I forget which one it was. But anyway, it was either at Henry Hill's bar or was at Jimmy Burke's bar. I think they lured him in there, and they did do a number on him. And I don't know if you know this, but Batts was very close with John Gotti. And yes, DeSimone did get killed. I know in the movie it said that Henry Hill said that they shot him in the face so they couldn't have a funeral, they couldn't open the casket. I don't believe that to be true because until today, I don't believe DeSimone's body has been found. So, you know, again, took some liberty.
Well, in the movie, I think they bury him like in a cornfield. So he's in the cornfield, man. Look for him in the cornfield.
Pretty on that. And again, guys like that don't last. Every guy that I know that was a loose cannon in that life, Roy DeMeo, you know, another example, these guys don't last. So it doesn't pay. They do a lot of damage during their lives, but they certainly end up paying for it at one point in time. So, look, I can go on and on with this. You know, this is a movie that I can spend the next hour and a half. It was a wonderful movie. I enjoyed it. I do want to tell you this. You know, that scene with Tommy DeSimone where... you know, am I funny? Funny how? Funny like a clown?
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown? I amuse you?
That wasn't in the original script. Joe Pesci kind of ad-libbed that. He went to Scorsese and asked if he could do that. I got to tell you, Joe Pesci...
That was a pretty funny scene. I wish I could recreate it, but I can't. Just because it's, you know, he's very good with his words.
Is probably one of the greatest gangster, you know, characters that you've ever seen. He's just terrific. He lights up the screen. He's so natural. He grew up around that life. He's terrific. He really is. He was great in Casino. He was great in Goodfellas. And he was even great in The Irishman. Played a different role, but he was great in The Irishman as Russ Bufalino. And I knew Russ. I knew him, you know, in my younger times. He was very close with my captain, Andrew Russo, at the time. So, you know, but that was a great scene. Great scene, and he just had the right language. He had the right moves. You know, he's just terrific.
That's crazy to think about that. He just kind of like it was on the pretty much didn't really think about it too much. You know, it wasn't part of the actual. I mean, it was, but it wasn't like it was scripted before. So it's pretty good, man.
She is great. So you know, that's about it. Look, everybody has seen Goodfellas. We're not going to go scene by scene. You've all seen it. Again, I described it pretty well accurate. But that's it for today. So go out. If you haven't seen the movie, go and watch it. I think you can get it on Netflix or wherever. It's probably on YouTube, too. If not, you pay a few bucks, you can see it. But you'll enjoy it. Ladies, it is kind of violent, kind of graphic. If you're not into that stuff, don't watch it. My wife won't watch it again. But for you guys out there that want to see a fairly accurate depiction of the life.
Honestly, if I'm single. But if I had a woman that did not want to watch Goodfellas or a mobster movie because it was too violent, quote unquote, then I don't think we would be made for each other. Just saying.
Go for it because you'll enjoy it. So that's about it for today. I want to thank you again. You know, we passed 150,000.
All right. So that's the end of the first part. Let's go on to part number two. He does have a pretty much a second part to it. So yeah, let's get into it.
Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Oh, Laura went. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say? Right. Funny how.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a sit down with Michael Francis. And today is Mob Movie Monday. And backed by popular demand, we have the movie Goodfellas, Part 2. Comments after we did part one, it just had to be another one, part two. And everybody was telling me, Michael, you didn't do it long enough. We can do a whole hour and a half. And well, if we're going to do an hour and a half, I suggest you go watch the entire movie. It's probably better than listening to me. But
yeah, this is not that long either. So Bear with us. Bear with me. It's not that long.
We're going to get into it a little bit more. Last time we did part one, I really focused on some of the characters in the movie and, you know, the main characters. And today we're going to go through some of the scenes. But before I do that,
Now, I haven't seen this. I've seen part of it, the first part of this, a little bit. But this part, I have not seen at all. So it's going
to
be interesting. I
have to answer a question because everybody's driving me crazy. Michael, when is there going to be a movie on your life? You got to get Scorsese. You got to get Pelleggi. I explained this once or twice, but we have a lot of new subscribers just tuning in for the first time. Right now, there is a movie based upon my life that is not a movie, I'm sorry, a television series based upon my life with a major production company, big time writer. It's in active development. I can't mention the name. I'm not at liberty to do that at this point in time, but I'm pretty sure by next year it'll be going into production. You'll be hearing all about it at the right time. They'll make an announcement. And then you'll know everything about it. I'm very excited about it. I think they're doing a great job in the development process. I'm working with them. So just look forward to that. So hopefully I've answered that for everybody. But let's get to Goodfellas Part 2. So we're going to go through a couple of scenes, and I'm going to tell you if they're authentic or not. I'll relate maybe some of my own personal experience. We'll take it from there. You know, one thing I do have...
That's going to be interesting. I like scenes. I mean, I think the scene, especially if you don't... know some of the characters, if you watch the movie, I think there's particular scenes that you will definitely remember from some of your most favorite scenes you will be able to
say. You remember when Sonny, the restaurant owner, came over to Pesci and asked him to pay the bill because, you know, he hadn't been paying his bill, it was all on credit? I've seen that happen. Now I'm going to be honest with you, I was a little bit of a high roller. I was out six nights a week in a club. One of them I used to frequent all the time.
That's kind of crazy. Being out, so I'm assuming that there's a lot of business behind it too. I mean, you're probably making a lot of deals. But if you're out every six nights a week, I mean, to me, I mean, even back in the day with my younger days, I don't think I would be able to do it, to be honest. So I don't know how he did it. Well, I guess if you're coked up. Or, you know, doing other illicit drugs. Not saying he was, but, I mean, you never know.
Time was a place called Channel 80. Was on Long Island. Paulie Vario happened to have a piece of that. I think I talked about it in another place. I would go there at least twice a week in that place. Sometimes three times. I loved it. I wish I had the money back that I spent. Because I'd bring my whole crew up there. Normally I was paying the tab. I wish I had the money back that I spent. So, yeah, when you're spending money, they love for you to come around. But... anyway, that was a funny scene. It is quite accurate. Some guys are, you know, they expected, hey, I'm a made guy. I don't have to pay the tab. People didn't like that. You know, you don't get a good reputation when you do something like that. So Tommy DeSimone, I don't know if that scene is exactly accurate. If he did have a tab there, I don't know. He seems like the kind of guy that could have been that way. You know, he was kind of a loose cannon, thought who the heck he was in some ways. He wasn't a made guy. But he seems like kind of guy that can do that. So that was a pretty accurate scene. The scene that followed, when Sonny now got scared because, you know, Pesci hit him with the bottle, he goes and see Paulie Vario, and he tells him about it, and he's upset about it. And he's afraid because he knows Tommy's a loose cannon. So he goes to Paulie, the boss that of that crew. Paulie, help me out. Well, how's he going to help him out? You know, take a piece of my club. If you got a piece of the club, everybody's got to pay the tab, and nobody's going to bother me. I know that. So Paulie reluctantly in the movie says, okay, I'll take a piece. Trust me, in real life, he would have taken the piece right away. He probably had a piece already, you know, and that wouldn't have happened.
I guess going back to, now that I think about it, in the movie, they burned that place down, but I don't know if they really explain why or how Paulie felt about it. So, because I guess if I was Paulie, I would definitely be kind of mad that they just kind of burned that shit down, to be honest.
Anyway, but he would have taken a piece right away. And then they showed they were busting the place out, you know, that they were charging everything on credit, bringing in liquor for a price and then selling it and busting the place out. Possibly, you know, Paulie might have been the kind of guy to do that. If that were me or a lot of guys that I know in that position, we would have wanted to see the place make money. I mean, I was involved in a lot of places.
See, I was right. I mean, if I'm the owner, why kill a cow, right? If it's giving you enough to eat without having to kill it. I don't know. Maybe.
It's a place called Jupiter's on Long Island. I had another place way out on Long Island. It was called the Butterfly. I forget the French name, but Butterfly in English, whatever it was. I had a piece of a couple of places, and I wanted to see them work. I wasn't looking to bust them out. So there was both ways that you can do that, depending upon who the owner was, how much respect you had for him, how big the club was. But yeah, we got involved in a lot of those situations. I enjoyed it because I was, you know, I used to go out 6 nights a week, so like a lot of other guys. So, you know, absolutely, Paulie could have taken a piece, whether he busted it out or not. I don't know. I don't know the particulars of that, but pretty realistic scene. The next scene, Copacabana. We see Henry going through the kitchen and getting into the club. Why would he have to do that? Because there was always a line, you know, out front for the Copacabana, because that was the club. Everybody played that club, from Sinatra to Dean Martin to Jimmy Roselli. I even saw Tiny Tim there. Bobby Darin, you name it.
I don't know none of those names except for Frank Sinatra. That's about it.
That was a favorite place of my dad's. He would get, you know, ringside table every time he went in. Julie Padel, who was the owner of the Copacabana, loved my father. My father always went in there with a big crew, you know, spent a lot of money. I always had a ringside table. It was a great app.
It's kind of, I wonder how he felt. I mean, just, or not how he felt, but man, it has to be so interesting, like, knowing your dad was like a big time mafia guy. I mean, how do you go away from, like, from that? You know what I mean? Like, how do you, if you're raised by, your dad's a mafia person, right? How can you be like, nah, I don't want to be part of the, I don't want to be part of the mafia anymore, you know?
Atmosphere, because in the Copa, you sat about 300 people. That was it, maybe 350. The tables were very narrow because they tried to squeeze as many people as they could in there. And if you were eating dinner in there, you were practically on top of each other. But for me, it was great. We always sat ringside. I was always right up front to see all the main headliners at that point in time. You can never see that today. Today, they play 50,000-seat arenas. But back then, it was so good. No matter where you were, you had a great seat in the house. But it was really terrific. I'll tell you one thing. I pulled on my dad once. You know, it was, I believe it was my, I can't remember, it was my senior prom or my graduation. But, you know, everybody wants to go out. You're graduating high school. It was high school. It was 1969. And so I said, Dad, you know, what could you do for us? You know, we know that the Fifth Dimension is playing at the Waldorf, and Dionne Warwick was playing at the Copa. So my dad, you know, could have got into both places and done us well. So he said, well, let's do it at the Copa. But he said, Michael, 40 people? This is Dionne Warwick. It's sold out. I said, Dad, come on. All my friends in school with their girls. My dad gets us in there. 40 kids that night, ringside table for Dionne Warwick. It was like the biggest thing in the world. Everybody loved it. We had a blast. After that, we go into the lounge. You know, the other side, they had a lounge there. And my friends were all impressed. I mean, that night, Joe Colombo was there. Everybody was there. Guys were handing me $100 bills, $200 bills. You know, congratulations.
$200 bills? unless they made $200 bills, I don't know. That's impressive. That is very impressive, though. Very impressive.
Congratulating me for graduating high school. My father was announcing at that time I was going on to college. You know, I was going to be a doctor. That was before, you know, everything blew up. But the Copacabana was a great place, and I got such great childhood memories of that place. But I'll tell you this. Henry Hill did not walk through that kitchen unless he was with Paulie Vario or somebody of real substance. Henry, again, a poor soul. I don't like to say anything negative stuff about him. It was a great movie, and it, you know, it served its purpose, but he just wasn't the guy that was portrayed. That
well, maybe eventually he was that type of person. I mean, they did make a movie or two out of him, so I don't know. Maybe, maybe not right at the back, because that one, and I think that was pretty much in the beginning of his career. So I don't know.
Portrayed to be in that movie. He never looked so good as he did in that movie. Anyway, so that's it. Let's move on. When Henry got married, you know, that scene, it just reminded me, weddings and funerals. When you're a made guy, people always tell you, there was times that I had to go to 3 weddings in a weekend and maybe 2 funerals. You're a made guy. You know, you get a call from the boss or your capo or whatever. Hey, somebody's getting married. You got to come. When I was a capo, I would call up and I would say, well, how many guys do you need there? I'll bring three or four guys and make sure they got their envelopes. And we would sit at a table. It was all the guys. Half the time, we didn't know who was getting married. And if somebody died, we didn't know who died. But we had to be respectful to the maid guy, whoever it was, you know, whose daughter or son was getting married. And, you know, God forbid, a family member was passed away. So weddings and funerals, you know, so often throughout the month on weekends, that's where I had to spend my time. It was just a thing. Another scene, and I've been asked about this all the time, is the scene in the prison when all the guys were together and they were eating.
Yeah, that scene was that scene was interesting. They're eating really good in prison. They're making steaks and they're eating pasta with razor thin garlic. Yeah. Probably not true. The other part, the wedding one is kind of interesting, cuz I mean, I guess, you know, I guess you can see that. I mean, that does happen. If you go to when I graduated high school, I was really surprised to see that some of my friends were getting a lot of money for graduating. And I remember I got a little bit of money too, but it wasn't nearly as much as they did. But hey, at the end of the day, I still feel pretty good because it did feel like I got a little bit of money. So yeah, that's probably the most money I had at the time.
I'm going to tell you this. That's a highly exaggerated scene. I've said this once before, and people came back to me and said, no, Michael, it was accurate. And I asked them, well, were you there? How do you know it was accurate? That was a highly exaggerated scene. I will tell you this. In federal prison, that would never happen. You don't ever have that kind of a setup in federal prison. Did we eat better? I know I spent 8 years. My dad spent 40, so I know exactly what was going on there.
Did we
eat better at times? Yes, because we had Italian guys in the kitchen. Sometimes we had the Mexican guys in the kitchen. We got close with them. We were able to smuggle a little food.
Hey, shout out to the Mexicans. Hey, and the Italians. Hey.
Food in, you get a hold of the guard and say, look, you know, we got some great cooks here. You can have a steak. You could eat along with us, but, you know, let us eat a little better. And so we ate a little better. And sometimes they'd smuggle some things out of the kitchen where we can be in our cells and eat a little better. So in federal prison, yes. State prison was a little bit more loose. Maybe you would have got guards to bring something in. Never to the extent that you saw in that prison scene. I never heard of it from anyone. I know countless guys that were in and out of prison. Never heard anything like that. It was highly exaggerated. But yes, Italians, because it's important to us, we make sure we get, you know, as best service as we possibly can. So that's it for today. We're going to see you again tomorrow. We got another thing coming up special. We got some interviews coming up pretty soon, working on it. You know, things are loosening up here a little bit in California where we may be able to have some face-to-face interviews. I told you, I don't like to do Zoom. I'm a one-on-one guy. I want to get in the room with somebody, talk to you about that. So that's happening soon. MichaelFrancis.com, it's growing. The community is growing. My crew is...
All right. So we'll probably stop it right there. Yeah, man, special shout out to Michael Francis. Nah, he's a very interesting guy. Very well spoken person too. Like you can tell that he's I won't say media trained, but he can talk very well. Well, I think that's gonna be do it for today for this episode. So if you made it this far, thank you so much. I mean, I love the support. And yeah, you guys, wherever you're at, have a good one. Peace.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue podcast. Please be sure to take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue.